Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I'm usually joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton, but today he is out and about at the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce doing a keynote speech about entrepreneurship. So I will see him next week, but I'm excited to have with me today, I got Mr. Larry Green, and Larry's been a guest before, and he is with an association that more and more people in Atlanta should get to know. And it's Meeting Professional International. It's the Georgia chapter. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Lee.
Now, you brought somebody with you today. What is that about?
I got with me Candace Crossfield here, who is going to be the incoming president for the next year.
Oh, very nice. And you guys are here to talk about some upcoming big event you guys are participating in?
Yes, we have a conference coming up August 16th through the 19th. It's going to be in beautiful San Juan, Puerto Rico. It's called our SEA conference, which is Summer Educational Alliance. And it is going to be a combination of education and networking.
And why don't you share with our listeners, for the people who missed the segment where you were here last time, about what GAMPI is and what you guys do for folks?
Sure. GAMPI, short for the Meeting Professionals International, Georgia chapter, is an educational organization. We are the leading and largest source of education in the Southeast for the hospitality industry, where we are made up of pretty much about 50% meeting planners and 50% suppliers who deliver services to different corporations for their meetings.
And at this event in Puerto Rico, what's going to happen there?
Candace, you want to take that?
Sure, Larry. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me here today. What happens in Puerto Rico?
Stays in Puerto Rico?
I was going to say that, actually.
Sorry, I didn't mean to steal.
No, that's okay. It kind of flowed. We do a combination of things. We'll do anything from sit-down educational conference types things with speakers, and then we'll mix it up and do, you know, anything from a mock site survey of the hotel to kind of teach people who haven't done that before how it to do it properly from the hotel side and also from the meeting professional side. We'll also have team-building activities that'll happen outside because you're in Puerto Rico. Let's face it, we need to be outside at the
exactly.
beach.
Exactly. Now, so you mentioned that some of the people that are members of your organization are meeting professionals, meeting planners, and all the vendors that serve the meeting industry. Who are the people that go to the conference? Is it the same group goes, or do you get kind of special?
Anybody can go. We do have a couple of organizations within the state that we are partnering with. GSAE, which is Georgia Society of Account Georgia Society of Association Executives, and then PCMA, Professional Commission Management Association, and then ISIS, which is International Special Event Society. So all within the meeting professional industry, but we want to include everyone. If you want to come and bring your husband and he can play while you work and learn, please do that, or vice versa. You want to come bring your wife, do the same thing. But yeah, anyone's welcome to attend. The conference is geared toward meeting professionals and their suppliers.
And we also do partner with other MPI chapters from around the U.S. who also participate in this.
So this event will not be only Georgia, so you'll have some other ones around?
Right. We actually put on the conference ourselves, and we partner with not only the associations Candace had talked about, but the other chapters of MPI who also come to get the education and the networking, because when they're dealing in, you know, with different states, it gives them a bigger, broader base of contacts.
And just taking a brief glance at the attendee list, I see two from Philly and two from Florida. So really from all over, they want to come and enjoy the conference and the education that we provide.
Now, when you guys have your meetings here in town, are other states coming to make you aware of what's happening in their state and their conference space, or is it just strictly Georgia for Georgians?
Well, we actually do have what's called an associate partnership, where we do have members of other chapters who are members of ours and vice versa.
Right. Now, can you walk us through what a typical meeting here is? Not this conference, but your typical GAMPI meeting? What happens there?
There are several different types. We have our typical one, which is a luncheon. Those will happen usually the third Tuesday of every month. So people will come in, we'll have lunch, we'll have a speaker, kind of teach us something new each time. We'll also have a workshop, which starts in the morning and ends around lunchtime. Again, the same thing, you'll have a speaker and a meal, mostly educational type things. We usually try to build networking in either before or after the educational portion so that everyone gets to renew and make new connections as far as, you know, your hotel partners and different industry partners that you have.
Are there a lot of meetings going along around in Atlanta and Georgia?
A little over once a month with just Gampy alone.
But just like in general, like this whole industry, this meeting industry, is this a large industry?
You're going to find that there are thousands of meetings going on all the time, probably monthly.
And then that includes like a company could have a meeting for their employees, but it could also be an industry could be having a trade show. A meeting is defined in really broad terms, isn't that right?
Very broad. Overnight, day meetings, half day meetings, you know, stuff that requires travel on an airplane, stuff that requires travel in a car, stuff that requires walking to the conference room down the street.
So Gampy has about, what, 800, 900 members, 1,000, somewhere in there,
we
right?
We have 800 members currently.
And then where does that put you in compared to other organizations in the country?
We are actually the sixth largest chapter of the MPI.
Oh, wow. So why do you think there's so much, just because there's so much activity here? Is that what draws so many members?
We are as we know, Atlanta is a very corporate hub for right. a lot of big businesses, so Georgia Pacific, a Coca-Cola, a Delta, just for example. So we do have, you know, with our 5.5 million people, many, many corporations have moved their headquarters here, and which has certainly created a much bigger need for an organization like ours.
To kind of educate and network amongst the members. So the members must be getting tremendous value in terms of education and networking, I would think.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's leading education. That's our goal every year, is to make the education bigger and better than it was the year before.
Is there new things happening? Like, what's the things that are, like, cutting edge now in terms of education that your members are kind of learning from you guys?
Well, you're probably your newest and most emerging is your technology. Uh-huh. The use of social media is now more than ever. From meetings going on where they can do holographic figures on the stage.
Right.
The technology has gotten to be pretty much futuristic.
And your instant Twitter feed that you can post up there and people can ask questions
right.
through that or
like
post
polling
comments.
And questions and comments that are happening like in real time.
Oh, yeah. And just doing, you know, industry experts up on stage versus paying $25,000 for a speaker. You know, you can learn so much from your peers, and we're just really taking advantage of those kind of things these days.
So now when you do this conference, this is an annual conference, right? You do it usually
it is.
In kind of some semi-exotic location usually to make it a kind of a
yeah,
because
fully exotic would be too much. So we do semi-exotic, yeah.
That's why it's a semi-annual
right.
thing, right? So now you're in Puerto Rico. You're having this event. Is this an expensive adventure for your people? How much does it cost?
You're not going to believe this. Our registration fee is $89, and it includes all your food. Everything is sponsored.
For four days.
Wow. So sponsorship must be an important component to this?
Sponsorship is very important. And
we love our sponsors.
Matter of fact,
who do you have this year?
This year, it's quite a nice lineup. Wynn and Encore Hotel in Las Vegas. The Greater Raleigh CVB, Convention Visitors Bureau. Green Classical Limousine, yay. we also have the Amusement Masters, Barker Specialty Company. Destination Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rico Conventions Bureau, and our largest sponsor this year will be the hotel, obviously providing everything, which is the Sheraton Puerto Rico Hotel and Casino.
Now, when you're deciding where to have this event, are places vying for this because they want you guys to be there?
They generally line up
Do they?
The door because, really, when you think of in this industry, a fam trip, a familiarization trip where a lot of properties will try to bring planners to their properties just
right.
to see them. We're providing a large, large number of planners at one time to their destination. So it's great for them to get us there.
Right.
Which is probably part of the reason they give us such a great deal.
Yeah, we could have a registrant from Coke there, and when they see the property and they paid an $89 registration rate and they see how beautiful and wonderful it is, they bring a $100,000 meeting there.
Right. So it's an investment on their part.
Oh, absolutely.
Matter of fact, from what we've already heard, the hotel has already received a contract or an RFP from one of the planners attending.
And they haven't even attended yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on what they've seen from, I guess, signing up and checking it out.
And just it being fresh and in their brain, it's in their right. face, and they're like, oh, I have a meeting. Let's do it there.
Why don't we do it there? Now, there's also alliance partners. Can you talk a little bit about what an alliance partner is and how that works?
Sure. When we set up this conference, as Candace was saying earlier, she was mentioning who the Alliance partners were. There are other organizations, kind of sister organizations, if you will, who are in the hospitality industry, and they partner with us because they understand that their members also can use the education, the networking that we're providing. So they do like to partner up with us for this conference.
But that's different than the convention and visitor bureaus that are the sponsors?
Yes. The convention bureau is, again, they're trying to get their exposure for right. their particular city to bring the meetings to their cities.
These alliance partners are associations just like GAMPI.
So they're like sister associations that maybe are...
Within the state or within the Southeast.
Right. So they're not competitive. They're complementary associations.
Well, kind of a little bit both. I mean, our membership will cross over. I'm a member of GAMPI. I'm also a member of GSAE, Georgia Society of Association Executives.
Right.
That organization will also have people that come to this that aren't members of GAMPI.
Right. Now, there's another element of this is a silent auction. Do you want to talk about that? Something special about this silent auction as opposed to the gazillion other silent auctions that are around?
My favorite part.
killer prizes.
Killer. Matter of fact, it is our signature item kind of within GAMPI, actually, in a lot of the events we do. But
is you'll help somebody move a mailbox?
Exactly. Free labor. Because so many hoteliers, so many destinations, so many vendors are always looking for ways to market their products, their hotels, everything. We end up with packages like it might be a Wynn Encore gives 3 nights, including tickets to a show, maybe a dinner. It could be, for instance, Green Class Limousines, 3 hours limousine service.
Right.
But these are just, you know, all different types. Anyone can put in a silent auction. It's almost free advertising for them,
right.
marketing. But we end up with several, many, many items, and we walk away with some, a lot of people walk away with some great deals.
And so what's kind of the big, do you have the big item yet, or you're still looking for?
We have vacations. We have tickets and dinner to a Braves game. Across the board, there's quite a few.
And there's still an opportunity to donate if they haven't already?
Absolutely. They can donate up to pretty much the Friday before the conference, which would be August the 9th. Yeah. And all they have to do is send it to the GAMPI office.
Mm-hmm.
And the GAMPI website, which you can get that on, is the www.gampi.org.
And then at that website, you can get information about this conference and joining GAMPI?
Absolutely.
Now, regarding joining GAMPI, you mentioned some of the people that would benefit from joining. Is there any groups out there that you wish you had more of that maybe you want to give a shout-out to maybe help convince them to join? Like, is there an underserved, like, there's, you know who attends, you know the benefits of attending. Is there a group that maybe aren't participating to the level that you think they should based on who's there and what they could get out of it?
Well, one of the things in this, when the economy kind of went south in kind of 08, 09 and mm-hmm. whatnot, and a lot of corporations switched to not only planners, but going to probably executive assistants to plan things who weren't near as knowledgeable as if you had a planner.
Right.
So that whole market is a great market for the GAMPI to be associated with, because they can learn a lot about what they're going to need to do on their jobs, the connections they'll need to find vendors in different markets.
So you're saying like virtual assistants or administrative assistants, that group?
That's one of them. And then the planners who don't realize that we provide so much education and technology, leading edge. Mm-hmm. It can help anyone from a novice to even the senior professional planner.
Candace, is there any group you'd like to see more of?
I was going to say the first one, the executive assistants, anyone that doesn't have planner in their title but plans a meeting.
Right.
There are so many things that you could learn, over the years that I've learned that I didn't know before my title was a planner, that GAMPI has really helped me from on the volunteer side, planning the meetings for GAMPI, to just attending the session and learning from the educational portion.
All right. So one more time, I want to give the website for people who want to attend this great event in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
It is www.gampi.org.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Larry and Candace.
Thank you, Lee.
I appreciate you guys being here. And we're going to move on next to Miss Elizabeth Cogswell-Baskin. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Lee. Glad to be here.
Now, you're with an organization called Tribe, Inc. Want to share a little bit about what you guys do for folks?
Sure. Tribe is an internal communications company, and we work primarily with large national and global companies to help communicate to their employees on anything from the corporate values to change management issues.
Have you ever had an event in Puerto Rico?
I have not.
You're going to work on that?
I think we're going to have to talk about that later.
So now, what's the pain the organization is having for them to engage with you guys?
I'm sorry?
What's the pain that the organization is having that they're like, hey, I better call Tribe?
Oh, it could be anything from we have a merger coming up and we don't know how to communicate that to our employees, to realizing that the corporate values are just not understood in terms of how to use them in day-to-day work, to UPS recently changed their dress code and they needed to communicate that to, now that you don't have to wear a suit and tie to UPS every day, what do you do?
Right. Now, but is this something that's a top-down, like an executive will say, hey, this is what I'd like our culture to be, or I imagine it to be, and then they kind of check out what the employees are actually doing and they're like, hey, this is not, there's a disconnect here. In my head, I imagine it to be a certain way, but reality is a different way. I better call Tribe to help me kind of align everything.
It's generally triggered by some need for employee engagement, and that's mm-hmm. a really big priority now for CEOs in all sorts of industries, because employee engagement has so much to do with productivity and retention and everything that helps make a company profitable.
So now, is engagement even more difficult nowadays when there's such a large virtual workforce?
It is more difficult when you have remote workers or people out in the field driving trucks or even on a sales floor. And that is that's an area we're seeing a lot of interest in right now, because that's an underserved audience, and it's also the audience that really affects that customer service.
Now, how do you recommend dealing with that remote workforce? Is there a simple solution, or is this complex?
There's no one silver bullet, but we've just finished a pretty large research project this summer on how to reach non-desk workers and what they want to be communicated with about. But it really first requires the acknowledgement that audience is important. A lot of companies have sort of made excuses that it's too hard. They're not in front of a computer all day. They're not right here in the same place.
Right, because there is something to be said for, hey, I can just go across the hall or the cubicle next to me and have a conversation and solve a problem like in seconds, as
sure.
opposed to send an email that takes them 20 minutes to respond back, or they're doing something else.
Or they don't even have email because
right.
they're out
and about
driving a truck.
Right.
But the that sort of face-to-face interaction is really important for culture, because when you already have a relationship with somebody
right.
and you have a face to put to their name, it's much easier. Those working relationships are easier. You're more likely to give somebody the benefit of the doubt if you hit a snag in that business relationship.
Right. And because you can, the proximity helps, right? Isn't there like humans kind of deal with each other better kind of in that environment?
Sure. It's much easier to make human connections when you're face-to-face so that, you know, you know that that person also likes mountain biking or border collies.
And also you can see more of the cues visually of body language and, like, are they kidding around? Are they not kidding around? And things like that. Those little subtleties that you can get at a glance as opposed to a text or an email.
Sure. You know, an email when you say, well, I really loved that. You couldn't, you know, did they say that or they say, I really loved that.
Right, you know, I mean, two different things.
What do you know? Right, very, very different.
So now, I guess this is all stemming from part of this corporate culture that companies are striving to have a really good corporate culture. And is it possible to change a corporate culture?
Oh, sure. You can definitely shift a culture.
You have to get rid of everybody and start
again?
Yeah,
you just start clean house, and you don't talk about that. You just do it.
Just do it one day. Just a note on the door.
Right, employees don't need to know what's happening. The thing about culture is that every company has one, whether they
want one or not. It's like branding. You're branding whether you want to or not.
Exactly, and it's very possible. In fact, that's a huge part of what we do, to shift your culture to something more positive. One of the first steps to that, though, is to really have a clear idea of what that company stands for. What are their values? What's the employee value proposition? What do they want to be in the world?
And then it kind of evolves. You said it's happening regardless. So how do you kind of manage it? You know, maybe it's happening, but it's not happening optimally. Or who decides of what optimal even is?
Usually that comes from the top. That comes from the CEO and top leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times Tribe will work with companies to help hammer that out and articulate it so that you know where you're starting from. And then you may have a workforce that, take remote employees. They may feel very undervalued and disconnected, and that makes them unengaged and, you know, a little negative about their work. You can make a conscious decision from the top down that you need to start connecting with that population of the workforce, and that you need to start celebrating them and helping them realize, really showing that you do value them and see them as an important part to the entire company vision.
Now, do you have an example you can share about that? I mean, you don't have to name names of the company, but a kind of a technique that you were able to do that?
I'm trying to figure out how to do that with a large Atlanta company without somebody knowing that I'm saying a large beverage manufacturer or a packaging company in this neighborhood.
But an organization that has the remote workers, they're out there, could it be something as simple as a weekly call or that they're all on? Or what are some of the techniques in order to do this?
That population is so underserved by so many Fortune 500 companies that it can be as simple as giving them all an email address.
The company, like their own personal business cards, things little things like that?
Not business cards so much as a way for them to be kept in the loop.
Uh-huh.
Because that audience is harder to communicate with, a lot of companies just sort of skip it and think, well, they're a common tactic is let's just have their immediate supervisors tell them about it. And that has a lot of flaws because that immediate supervisor could be really engaged or really not engaged, and that company's supervisor will filter what they think is important for the employees to help. So you're having employees across the board who aren't hearing the exact same story. And that, from our research, that bothers them. They really want to be able to hear the same story as everybody else and to know that they're getting accurate information. So the steps are pretty simple. You just need to have a commitment to doing that and then work with somebody like Tribe to help you get it done.
Now, when you're beginning an engagement with one of these companies, what's your first step? Is it kind of research and kind of getting the lay of the land and how things are operating?
Right. Discovery is the first phase of our process always, because every company is so different, from the kind of employees they hire to the generational mix to, are they primarily engineers? Are they primarily writers? Are they primarily out in a warehouse?
Right.
What's the mix of that? Where are they located? What do they stand for? You know, Target is very different from UPS, from Embassy Suites, from Porsche, and all of those clients. We need to really understand what the nuances of their culture are. And also we can, if you're in a culture, for instance, if you have worked at UPS or Embassy Suites for years and years, then you don't see things that are different about your company that we can offer that because we've seen so many.
Right, you have best practices.
Exactly, and we've seen behind the curtain in so many large companies that we can have what we call a visitor's view, where we can see, oh, this is such a distinct and important part of your culture. We need to work with this.
Now, have you seen some common threads that kind of people make in general?
It's interesting because generally in internal communications, IC professionals don't really see what their peers are doing. It's not like the external brand where you see their commercials and you see their ads and you see what they're doing on their website. For internal communications with employees, Delta doesn't really see what Coke does. So one thing that we're able to do is we can share best practices across those industries and be able to apply what one company has learned and what successes and failures they've had to another.
Right.
And it's interesting. We had a roundtable at Tribe a year or two ago on social media, and we had people there from Porsche and people there from Coke Beverages, formerly Coke Enterprises. And you wouldn't think that those two companies would have a ton in common, but
right.
they really just were on fire being able to talk to each other about how to connect to remote employees.
Because they're very hungry for that information, right?
Sure. You just don't see it as an IC professional, and you don't realize that people in completely different industries may be dealing with some of the exact same issues. You know, you may... we've been talking with Ann Taylor lately, and they have issues on their sales floor that might be the same as issues that Home Depot has, and you don't think about women's apparel and
right, you would
you
think
know, home renovations having a lot that they need to learn from each other.
Right.
But they certainly can.
Now, is there challenges with the so many generations working together in the workforce nowadays?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the young ones think the boomers don't really know what they're doing. Why should they be my boss? I know how to work that social media better than they do. And,
right.
And the boomers think the Gen Ys are coming in wanting their entry-level CEO position. So we've done a lot of research with that. And actually, the Gen Y group is, for a year or two, we were hearing a lot of large employers just ready to wring their necks because
right.
those kids are, they're very precocious, they're very confident, they've been told their whole life they're good at everything, and they're not really interested in paying the price or doing the menial work. But if you can harness that group's passion, they are so energized and confident, and actually at Tribe we hire a lot of Gen Y, and they are an incredible generation, and I feel very confident about leaving the business world in their hands.
So, but you have to be mindful of the techniques to get the best out of them?
Sure. And
like
also,
you can't just do what you did for the boomers and say, do it the way they're doing it.
Right. It's very different. The younger generation wants a lot more personal attention in guiding their individual careers, for instance. They want a lot more feedback
right.
than a boomer would. And also, they're going to want a different communication mix. They're used to using social media in their personal life. And it to them, to show up to work and not be able to connect with somebody in another division through Facebook or
right.
LinkedIn or something just seems crazy.
Right.
It's such an easy...
It's archaic to them, right?
Right. And they don't even... For technology for that younger generation, for communication, is almost invisible to them. It's like turning on a water faucet. You
right.
know, they don't see the water faucet. They see the water.
Right. And they've grown up with it, so it's,
sure.
it's second nature.
Sure.
Now, can you talk a little bit about your personal kind of evolution to get to where Tribe is today? Like, how did that come about?
Well, my background is in... creative departments of ad agencies. I've been the creative director of agencies around the Southeast. I started as a writer and was always very involved in external branding, television commercials, magazine. And when I started Tribe, we just sort of evolved. We started noticing that a lot of our really most interesting projects were for the internal audience. And that just happened by chance, you know, to just... It was the first thing that UPS hired us to do. It was the first thing that Porsche hired us to do. And it took me several years to really recognize or admit that, yeah, okay, we are internal communications. And when I finally got that...
Was that okay for you? Because like in ads agency, you know, that's, you know, you always want the big commercial national seen by millions of people. And now you're, you know, you're kind of have a different audience.
Right. And I, you know, when I grew up in the ad industry, what happened is... if you were really good, they put you on the external brand. And if you were not maybe quite so talented, it's like, honey, you go back there and you work on the internal stuff. You write that newsletter. And so there was a little bit of a stigma to me until I finally got it, that internal communications is such an interesting niche and you're actually able to impact the way employees' quality of work life
right.
is. And it's much more... I find it much more meaningful and much more exciting, and every project is so different because you, it's never a one-size-fits-all thing. It's not a 30-second commercial, and we want to, you know, we want to try to get a helicopter in it because that would be fun.
Right. Or we'll win, you know, be in the Super Bowl at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how is the ROI of this determined in the minds of the companies that hire you?
Well, that's interesting that you ask, because measurement is one of our really six key practice areas. It's more difficult to measure employee engagement because you're not just looking at sales numbers. It's a little bit less tangible.
Right.
So the way Tribe approaches it is we measure several milestones along the way, from being aware that this communication, whatever the messaging is, like, for instance, we're shifting to a completely new human resources model.
Right.
So are they aware of the change is coming, and then do they understand it, and then do they accept it? Is it, you know, are they having buy-in? And then the last phase would be for them to really become advocates for their colleagues and peers. But that's more complex than just did they open that.
Right, you know, like how many click-throughs.
Exactly. You know, you don't. We're really measuring the behavioral change.
Right.
And that's the success of the communication, if we really were successful in changing the behavior and the way those employees do their work.
Right, and it seems it's even deeper than that, because if you're trying to affect culture, like, how do you measure culture?
Right. I mean, there are ways you can sort of apply metrics to it, but it's very subjective, and it's qualitative, and it's also a slow build. It's mm-hmm. not like you can put a program in place and measure it 6 months later. And,
right.
And it's attributed to so many factors, so you can't isolate it and say, wow, that magazine we did on culture really...
Right. That was the difference.
Right.
You know, do more magazine
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Right. So now, what do you guys got ahead of you?
We have...
You have a wellness thing you got going on now?
Oh, we always have a wellness thing going on. We usually have like an annual fitness competition that gets really, really competitive.
That's just an internal thing for your tribe?
Right. That's one of our engagement programs.
Because we do a show here on corporate wellness, and I've been involved in a lot of those shows, and engagement is a key component to that. It's hard. You know, there's a bunch of reasons, from lowering healthcare costs mm-hmm. to get employees involved in wellness programs. Do you work in that area as well?
Well, we do. We don't execute the wellness programs, but we would execute the communications to increase participation
right.
and help.
Because engagement is critical.
Well, there's something really interesting that happens when you do something. For instance, like if the company does a 5K together.
Right.
Our client LexisNexis hosts an annual race called the Windward Challenge, and when you see your CEO out there in running shorts and you see him sweating like the rest of them, it really helps that leadership group seem like real human beings, which
right.
is a huge part of being able to trust them and respect them. And it allows people across different silos are such a huge issue for so many companies now, and it allows people across divisions, across geography, across departments to have a real relationship with others. You're out there, you are an accountant and you are a marketing person, but you both run a 10-minute mile.
Right.
So,
and you've never talked to each other in the building, you know.
Right, and you've never had a reason to talk to each other before, or it might be somebody that you do work with closely and there's a little bit of friction there.
Right.
And just having that personal human experience of running together, having a beer together, building a habitat house, whatever you can do outside to help people.
The normal workflow that helps.
Help
right?
people see each other as human beings
right.
and not just job titles.
A different facet of their personality maybe comes out.
Exactly.
Now, I know in the corporate wellness thing, the engagement, from what I've heard from the experts that talk about it that top down is key. Like that it has to be kind of, there has to be buy-in from the top, and it kind of trickles down to everybody else. Is that universal in most of your work?
That works in everything, particularly in change management. If there is going to be some major change and you don't have a CEO or somebody on the top management team really owning that, then it's just not going to ring true.
Right. That's what you found. Mm-hmm. Now, you've been doing this for a while. Tribe's been around for how long?
10 years now.
10 years. And what's your sweet spot for customers?
Not necessarily. We work with companies all over, but we love Atlanta companies. Actually, we're about 5 miles away from most of our clients because this 285
right.
upper loop is everybody from, you know, UPS to Home Depot.
Uh-huh. And then, so you work with large companies like that?
Usually large national or global brands.
And then when you work with those large organizations, are you working with the entire organization or a division within the organization?
It depends a little bit, but primarily it is these companies are large enough to have an internal communications or company or a director of culture.
Uh-huh.
Occasionally we'll work with HR, but generally it goes through somebody who is assigned to the employee population.
And then are you replacing that person or are you a tool for that, like director of culture or something?
Oh, we're a tool for that person.
Uh-huh. So you work hand in hand with them to
Absolutely.
Disseminate whatever work needs to be done.
And a lot of times there's a gray area of where our work picks up and theirs leaves off. I mean, we can...
It's a partnership, it sounds
Absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, do you have a website?
It's tribeinc.com.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for participating.
Thank you.
And definitely check them out, tribeinc.com.
That's it.
Thanks
thank
so
you.
Much.
Can we also talk about how...
Go ahead.
Can we also talk about how stylish she is and her pin matches her dress?
You like that?
Oh, it
that
does.
Always?
Look at that. No, yeah, I always change my pin.
It's Tribe.
I'm
if
impressed.
If I were not wearing an orange dress, I would not have an orange pin.
I'm impressed.
Is that
thank
the colors
Candace,
of Tribe?
Actually, it is one of them. Turquoise and orange are big with us.
See
but
that?
I don't always dress in Tribe costume.
That was good, paying attention to the detail there.
Mm-hmm.
See? Another reason to join Gampy, the attention to detail. All right, we're going to close the show with a Ron Davis. He's with Sprout Baby Food. Now, this is an exciting story because Ron, well, why don't you share it, how Sprout Baby Food is new to the Atlanta area.
Yes. Thank you, Lee, for having me. We Sprout is the leader in ultra-premium organic baby food in the country. And in late 2010, I was approached by a recruiter to go to New York to look at this opportunity to build, to turn around and build a startup business that to me resonated to a market, a product that really was needed in the market.
Uh-huh.
And so I went up and I met with the chairman and a few of the board members and found it to be a very exciting opportunity. I am a food guy. I've been in the food
industry. You've been in the food industry
32 years. Yeah, in fact, what Elizabeth talks about is a lot of what I do. I'm a turnaround guy. I've been a CEO for many years and built a couple companies, sold them, turned them around. And for many years, I was helping entrepreneurs take the business to the next level. So taking on an entrepreneurial company from a co-founder, was new for me, taking it on and building it from that small of a base. We were roughly, when I arrived in December 2010, we were roughly in 4,000 grocery stores. We were, like a lot of entrepreneurs, they have a lot of great ideas and they have a passion. And really, any idea is a great idea. And the challenge that Sprout had was the founder had so many great ideas that raising the money to do all of them was impractical.
Right.
So,
do you see that in CEOs like that? They kind of get distracted by shiny objects like that.
Yes. I mean, well, I invested in the company as well because I really believe in the brand. So, I went up and did some unpolishing of certain initiatives that were going on and tried to. The co-founder stepped aside. And I came in to take over the business in what was really a situation where the board was trying to get their arms around the business and the financials and the cash burn that was occurring. A lot of small businesses really go through a lot of cash burn. They go
sure.
a great initiative of raising a lot of money, and they think the money never ends. And as a result, the money dries up very quickly. And so the biggest challenge I had was going in and trying to get my arms around what the core initiatives were and where the focus needed to be. And in my agreement was I would live in Manhattan for up to a year and then have the opportunity to move the business into a more practical area, a more cost-efficient
right.
area. And being that I've been in Atlanta for many years, in the last 7 years particularly, and prior to that I was with Edwards Baking Company here in Atlanta from 94 to 99, and we did a great build-up strategy there, had five acquisitions, and then it was sold to Schwann's in a few years back, and a lot of good talent remained here in Atlanta.
Right.
So when I was living here in Suwannee, I realized that the opportunity was to go up, get my arms around the business, figure out the talent, get a game plan, put the strategy in place, figure out the financials, get arms around the cost, figure out what we needed to do, and fine-tune where we wanted to put the resources, both financially and from an employee standpoint.
Right.
Within 5 months, we moved the business to Duluth in Sugarloaf.
So the entire business, not leadership and manufacturing?
Yes. And in fact, I did not bring hardly any of the leadership down. The fact is that there was a lot of great people in mm-hmm. the company, but hardly any of them had the skill set in the food industry. They were really good people, and they didn't have the skill set. And plus, they were overpaid. I mean, we were paying significantly higher wages in Manhattan than we do in Atlanta.
Sure.
And our, for example, rent went from $25,000 a month to $4,000 a month in a really nice office complex in Sugarloaf.
Where was manufacturing take place?
We outsource all of our manufacturing, and we outsource most of our manufacturing in Indiana with Ameriqual.
So that nothing changed in that regard?
Well, no, because I knew all these folks.
Right.
I mean, being in industry, I knew all the manufacturers. In fact, we just relocated our manufacturing to Indiana with a much better partner who is very innovative and has a lot of capital behind being able to do things with us.
Now, are you? Is everything going according to your plan?
Well, you know, this is a much bigger challenge than I thought it would be. The financials were in a little
more. Do you
need
me to connect you with Elizabeth?
Well, actually, culturally, I have a good culture now, thanks to a lot of the things that Elizabeth was communicating about and telling us about. And I was shaking my head a lot because what she talked about really did resonate with the skills that I think I do as a turnaround and building culture.
Right.
That is one of the most important things. You know, we talk about baby food is great, but it's, you know, can't do it without people.
Sure.
So at the end of the day, it's about having the right team around you, creating initiatives, creating a strategy, getting people, and removing obstacles. And once you do that, you create that path for their success. And so we've grown the business from 4,000 grocery stores to over 13,500 grocery stores in a year.
That short period of time.
Yes, in a year and a half. And our revenues have grown from $4 million to $12 million to a run rate of $30 million right now.
Wow.
Our plan is to be profitable in Q4 of this year.
And then that's an ultra-premium product in this economy. It's amazing.
Interesting, though, when you look at moms, there's one thing. These young moms are very savvy. They're very internet savvy. They're social media savvy. They will not give up healthy foods for their babies.
Right.
More now than ever.
Right. They're not skimping in this area.
Not at all. And in fact, you know, our growth is a result of coming away from the big giant.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're able to deliver what we say we deliver and what we package is because of the process we use. We're the first super premium organic baby food in a pouch. The glass jars, they're overcooked because of the sterilization process. The pouch allows us to cook it less time and preserve all these ingredients, high-quality ingredients that we put in to the product. The recipes are all developed. Our co-founder, who's still with the company, is Tyler Florence. He's a celebrity chef, a veteran on the Food Network.
Mm-hmm.
He creates all of our formulas. They're very unique. We have the most balanced menu or recipes of any of our competition of super premium organic baby food because of our process. We can do vegetables only. We can do vegetables and grains. And some of the other super premium baby food companies that are coming on our tails have to put lemon juice and fruits in almost all of their pouches. It's because of the unique relationship and partnership we have with our manufacturer and the way we develop our recipes. So we've got this edge of having a well-balanced menu, super premium, developed by chef created, and we really feel like we have something very special.
Now, how do you kind of build community within the users of the products, like the moms? Are you doing things on social media? What kind of outreach
do you
have?
Big time. We have the Urban Group as our social media agency in town here.
Mm-hmm.
They're ex-Coke employees. My VP of marketing is Jeff Stella from Coca-Cola. He also worked at Pillsbury and General Mills. All of the people we have on our team are seasoned professionals who have a lot of experience in building brands, right, and managing businesses. So we use social media in a big way. We use traditional focus groups. But social media, by far, we have over 10,000 moms on access to us on the internet, mm-hmm, that we'll ask them if they want to volunteer to taste new products.
Right.
And so we go through a very strenuous vetting process before we take anything to market. And so the growth of the company going forward is to continue growing distribution. We have over 51% ACV right now. We introduced 8 new toddler meals in April of this year. And this is a team of 14 people. We outsource a lot, but our team is launching 28 new products in August.
Wow, that is phenomenal.
And we're increasing our distribution, points of distribution, by over 40% going into these grocery chains like Publix, Kroger, Walmart. I mean, we're in all the major grocery chains in the country. And this is reinventing the company, and it's going to put us to a path of profitability in Q4. It's a huge turnaround.
Yeah, it's an amazing success story. Now, since you've been here back in Atlanta, is this you're going to stay in this space here of the ultra premium baby food, or can you expand it out to get into a little older kids?
Well, the toddler meals were just launched in the spring of this year, and they're now being placed on the shelf. We definitely plan on aging up, as we mm-hmm. call it, aging right. up into toddlers and kids. You know, the baby food market's been stuck at about $1.4 billion for 10 years, mostly managed by Gerber.
Right.
And Earth's Best was the original organic player out there, but we're taking share away from them. In order to get into the multi-billion-dollar business, you have to age up into kids. Kids, there's a big demand for kids' meals and convenience foods and snacks. So that is definitely our growth pattern for the next 6 months to 2 years.
But you build the brand with the infants and the moms like the brand.
There.
So then
you're
just, as the kid's aging, you get to come along for the ride, right?
Yeah, and our mission is to create this relationship. I mean, our mission and our goal is to create a relationship between healthy, good-tasting food and the babies from day one, from
right.
start, and grow with them as they age.
Now, how has this increase in childhood obesity come into play? Like, are you kind of leveraging that opportunity?
Well, I think, you know, we don't have a lot of marketing funds at this stage, but social media, and I got to be honest,
is that a concern for the moms? Are you hearing that?
Well, it is. That's why I think they're resonant. It's exciting for moms to have that choice, where they know organic. I mean, our sodium levels are very healthy
right.
levels. If you go to some of the processed baby foods, they're high in sodium.
Right.
That's where they get their taste. Ours are all of our tastes are from the natural ingredients of the products.
Right.
And so, yes, it is.
And the move to organic, the move to local, the move to all this, you know, farm to table kind of thing.
Sustainability is very much into our hands. And we believe, you know, organics used to be you go to Whole Foods, you go to Fresh Market.
Right.
Today, the report is that now grocers, mainstream grocery stores, sell more organics than the natural channels. And they continue to expand that shelf space to take away traditional and put in organic.
Wow.
And that's just not, I mean, that's we're seeing it exponentially grow from the shelf, expansion on the shelf.
Right. So you're looking to get into more grocery stores? I mean, you're in 13,000?
We're in 13,500, and there's another,
how
probably
many?
A 10% ACV left for us to get that we
right.
think is makes sense. There's only two or three other major ones.
Right.
Safeway, Super
That's what
Value,
I thought.
Target.
You're running out of
Yeah,
places
those
to
are
go.
The only ones that are left, and our competition got there. And now in January, they have a new reset time
right.
frame
so that's
that we hope to get in January. Then we'll feel like we have the best distribution. Then it's about innovation. It's
right.
about getting new products out there that are, you know, great for you and
to get more shelf space.
And more shelf space and age up.
Right.
Yeah.
So if mom wanted to learn more or, okay, I guess a grocer wanted to learn more, well, you have a website?
Yes, sproutfoods.com.
And on Facebook, I'm sure you're on all the
Oh, yes, everywhere,
if
all
you
the
go
social media.
Sprout Foods.
Sprout Foods, you'll find it. Yeah, first thing up. Yeah.
And then when you go there on the Facebook page, are there opportunities for moms to engage with you? And
actually engage with Tyler as well.
Things?
Tyler's got a tweet account. He's on Twitter every day. Tyler will tweet right back to you on Sprout Baby Food. He is fully engaged with the process, as well as we have our social media agency, as well as our in-house people. So we have full access to moms.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show, Ron.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Atlanta Business Radio. We will see you all next week.